The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Today FM.
It all happens here.
Where we're delighted to be joined for the Culture Club today by Rory O'Neill, also known as Panty Bliss. And before we get to his choices, Rory, as Panty Bliss is emceeing this year's Rock Against Homelessness concert in aid of Focus Ireland. Rory, when is it on and how has it been done this year?
It's on the 20th, which is next Sunday. And tickets from Ticketmaster, €23, and it's available for 7 days afterwards. It's all done online this year, which has its challenges and all, but actually works out in some ways because, unlike previous years when everything was done in the Olympia on the night, we're not limited this year in the number of tickets we can sell, so that's good for Focus. And also, it meant that, you know, it was good for the lineup. It was easy to get people to agree to do it, and well, people are usually delighted to help Focus anyway, but it means we have people performing from other venues, not just the Olympia this year, although a lot of it is from the Olympia.
Yeah, I'm just going to ask that. There are some setups that's going to be done on stage in the Olympia, albeit without the audience in front of them, the live audience. Yeah. It'll be done online instead. Who have you got this year?
Well, we have Pillow Queens, arguably the hottest band in the world at the minute. There's Rodrigo Gabriela, Aslan, Wyvern Lingo, Blind Boy Boat Club. I'm missing some there, but Gilbert O'Sullivan, Your Maori Delight. Yeah, loads of people.
Okay. Well, how much of a challenge do you think is this going
Tolu
to be?
McKay. How could I forget Tolu McKay? Yes.
How much of a challenge is this going to be for yourself, do you reckon, in actually getting an atmosphere going as the MC when you have an empty audience or auditorium in front of you and you're performing for the web?
Well, I have had 15 months to get used to performing for me living room for Zoom audiences and all that kind of thing. So it's all well in hand, and a great director on board and everything. So, yeah, I think it's going to be great.
How have you dealt with performing from your living room?
I hate it. I absolutely hate it. It's just like, you know, the whole reason I and, you know, performers get into this whole thing is because we're hoarse with the clap and the atmosphere and all of that stuff. And, you know, it was great to be able to still do some stuff online over the pandemic and all that. But it's just never going to replace being in front of a live audience. You know, when you're standing in your living room, you do your bit or your thing and it's over, and then you're standing alone in your living room. Like, it's just not... It's not it. It's just not it.
So you feel very flat afterwards, do you?
Yeah, you don't get any of the buzz and the fun of it, you know? You know, like all performers, it's about the sort of live interaction and the energy in the room and all that. And even then afterwards, it's also about the, you know, having a drink with the other people and, you know, and all of that is missing in a Zoom. I mean, you know, I think people are so used to watching things on screens these days and everything, it's maybe less of a jolt for the audience, but for the performer, it's not the same.
When it comes to meeting people, have you got Panty Bar going again outside dining on Capel Street?
We have, thank God. We reopened last Monday for outdoors, and it's gone fantastically well. It's just been really great to see the old regular customers that we haven't seen in 15 months, and just, you know, just faces that you'd almost forgotten used to be in your life, because, you know, the kind of people you only bump into every now and then, and to see them again. And of course, the great weather for the first weekend and everything all really helped. So we're just thrilled to have the doors open again, even if it's not entirely the same. It's we're delighted.
Of course, you were in the news because there was some louts got involved in putting homophobic graffiti up on a building near yours, pointing towards the bar. How encouraged have you been by the public reaction of support against that?
The reaction has been, you know, great. You know, I hesitated to post it at all, because sometimes I don't even want to give these things oxygen. But it was just a bit gut-punching, that one, partly because what they wrote was really disgusting, and secondly, because it was just after our first opening weekend. You know, they did it on the Sunday night, and I was just like, after such a great weekend and finally reopening after 15 months. It's been some dick to come along and do that. So I stick it up for that. But, you know, in some ways, water's off a duck's back in general. I mean,
yeah, but do you ever get used to that? I mean, maybe you've been living your life dealing with homophobia, but is there a situation whereby you sort of become that you ignore it, or does it still hurt in the way that some people want it to hurt you? And should it hurt on the basis that, yes, it's a deliberate affront to your feelings?
In general, the kind of stuff, you know, say for, that we're talking about around the bar, that no, it doesn't hurt. That one just was, particularly annoyed me, A, because of what they actually wrote, and B, because it was just after our first opening weekend after 15 months. But, we've had other incidents in the past, of course. In fact, the last Pride, a guy chucked a brick through the window with fags out written on it, smashed the window while there was customers inside. You know, so that was worse, really. But most of that stuff, it really is water off a duck's back. We are a loud and proud gay bar sitting on a corner with, my name above the door. And, so people can write to me. You don't have to go looking for some secret address. They can just write to the bar, and they do. And while lots of times people are writing for nice reasons, we get a steady, fairly constant, I'm not talking about every day or anything, but a very steady, very regular stream of absolute nonsense sent to us. Some of it just being straight up abusive, and a lot of it sort of, couched in some sort of fake concern because we're all going to go to hell and, we need to turn to Jesus or whatever.
Says an awful lot more about the people who do it than probably says about you, doesn't it?
It does. And we just laugh about it in the bar. Like when we get one, another one, we share it around while we're, setting up the bar that day, and everybody's having a good laugh about it. So it really is water off a duck's back, and it doesn't. Good. And I'm very, very aware that those people don't represent any sort of majority view or whatever. Like I said, that one there the other day, just because it was particularly disgusting what they wrote, and the fact that it was just after our first opening weekend and we were all in such great moods about it just really pissed me off, that one.
Okay, listen, let's get to your choices for the Culture Club. We ask every guest to nominate the first single. Not everyone remembers singles. I have to say, you are old enough to have bought a single.
I am. And, my first... I actually very clearly remember buying my first single. And it's a really weird one. And partly I remember it so much because I have older brothers and sisters. So a lot of my music when I was younger were influenced by them. And I bought my first single. It was Mary's Boy Child by Boney M. But I bought it in like a little, what the Americans call a garage sale or yard sale. Like, our neighbors were having like, selling stuff off. Out of boxes in their garage, and I bought Mary's Boy Child by Boney M, and I was thrilled because I felt more grown up. I was buying my own records, even if it was out of somebody's garage.
Let's hear a little bit of it. Okay, that's as much as I can listen to on it, I have to admit. Were you a holy little boy, Rory?
I wasn't at all, but I knew who Boney M was, and that's why I bought it. It's so funny that was it, my first ever single, but I can't change the past.
Well, fair play to you for admitting to the truthfully as to what it was. Okay, maybe a little bit better. Your favourite album, tell us about it, why you picked this one.
Well, my favorite album is probably Off the Wall by Michael Jackson.
Okay.
Michael Jackson was my teen obsession. He was my whatever, Girls Aloud or whatever it would be. God, I'm showing my age, not even, sorry, whatever it would be these days. you know, I was obsessed with Michael Jackson when I was, you know, a teenager and pre-internet and all of that. And so I remember, like, you know, haranguing my mother, you know, to buy Time magazine because I knew that they were going about to do a cover story on him. You know, that kind of obsession.
Yeah.
And it came to its apogee, I guess, you know, with Thriller. But Off the Wall was always my own particular, you know, favorite album. And, you know, I still know every single syllable, every beat, every, you know, part of it. So, you know, and I, you know, I had gotten into the Jackson 5, you know, and then the Jacksons. And I started to fall out of love with Michael probably around the Bad album. So it didn't last forever in some ways, but he absolutely was my absolute teenage obsession. And yeah.
Let's hear the title track from Off the Wall. Which, of course, is not the title track. That's Rock With You, produced by Quincy Jones. When he died, what sort of emotions did that stir in you, Rory?
Tons. And interestingly, weirdly, maybe in a fun way, I was actually on stage in Panty Bar in the middle of a show when he died. And it was a Saturday night, I guess, or Thursday night. I can't remember. In the middle of the show, all the phones started going off. You know, started ringing and people started getting text messages. And I could sense and see that something was happening. And it turns out it was Michael Jackson. It's funny because, you know, like I said, I sort of started to fall out of love with Michael sort of just maybe around the Bad album just after that. And to me, there were always kind of two Michael Jacksons. There was the Michael Jackson sort of up to that point who I had been obsessed with and, you know, wanted to, you know, worship and be friends with and listen to and all that stuff. And then there was the later Michael Jackson who in my head I had already sort of separated him out in a way because, you know, he didn't even look the same. And so in a weird way, my Michael Jackson had sort of died a slow death, you know, a number of years beforehand. But it's still, of course, because he was just such a huge and iconic figure, generally, but also, of course, in my sort of, you know, musical life, I had a lot of emotions and complicated emotions
sure.
around the time he died. Yeah.
We asked your favorite artist. You nominated Dolly Parton. Why so?
Well, a million reasons. I think if you're asking me who's somebody's favorite artist, it has to encapsulate not just the music and the songwriting and all that, but also something about who they are and what they mean to you. And, you know, I've also worshipped Dolly Parton forever. You know, I think you anyway, although I'm never confident that everybody will know, but I'm sure you will know what a spectacularly great songwriter and musician she is.
Yes.
And, you know, always has been. But on top of that, then, as a sort of a figure in the music world or in the sort of cultural landscape, you know, she's a spectacular woman. She's incredibly smart. She's very funny, which appeals to me. She's a, you know, spectacularly successful businesswoman. And she's also, just incredibly open, sort of hearted and giving. And, you know, she employs half of Tennessee and, you know, her imagination book library, you know, covers half the globe and has given literally millions of books to children growing up, including here in Ireland. And then, of course, to top all that, she bloody well funded the development of the Moderna vaccine. So, you know, it's hard to find a, you know, fault in Dolly at all. So I've always loved Dolly. And, you know, one of my sort of, she's the only artist, by the way, that I ever did that thing where you queue up at a record store for hours and wait to meet.
All right. And then you got your meet and greet for how long?
I did just for a few minutes. You know, she signed the album and had a little chat and all that. And then about, I'd say about 15 years ago or something, some friends of mine, and this is before the real internet stuff, but my friends of mine managed to persuade her management somehow or whatever to make a little video recording for me and send it to me. And it was the best birthday present ever.
I said, I was a thrill. Let's hear a little bit of Dolly Parton's music. Here You Come Again. Unfortunately, because we're limited in time, I can't play that in full, although I'd love to. Dolly Parton's Here You Come Again. We also asked you, Rory O'Neill, for the best gigs you were at. You gave us two. First of all, tell us about Patti LaBelle in New York City.
Well, I'm a big Patti. You can sort of sense where my musical tastes are, but I love Patti LaBelle. And I love her, too, for the sort of camp drama of her. And I give you two because Patti LaBelle, in that case, first of all, it was, you know, in New York at the Apollo Theatre. And secondly, it was because of the gay drama of how she opened her show. You know, the curtains back and she's standing there in a giant hood and a cloak and the music starts. And then all you see for the first like three whole minutes is her nails slowly appearing out from the opening of the front of the cloak. I love Patti. She's like such a great, you know, performer. That voice, you know, is incredible, sort of mind blowing. So I loved that show. But other than that, I've seen Grace Jones a few times, and I think probably my favorite gig ever, if I really had to go and plumb for one, is Grace Jones at the Olympia Theatre there a couple of years ago.
Well, before you tell us about it, we actually have something to play from that because the Olympia gig was filmed for a documentary called Bloodlight and Bammy, and this clip is from the documentary. Okay, that's Grace Jones, Warm Leatherette. Explain that one to us, please, Rory O'Neill.
I've always loved Grace. And again, spectacular showwoman. So if you want to go and see somebody live. But of course, that gig, yes, it was being filmed for that documentary. So she was, you know, pulling out all of her best you know, for it, and there's great theatrics about it. But then for me also, I got to have this special thing about it because I got to meet her afterwards and hang out in her dressing room and get drunk with her for a couple of hours. So I have, you know, all in all, you know, you can't repackage that gig and make it better for me, you know.
Rory O'Neill, Panty Bliss, stay with us, please, for the second part of the Culture Club, which is coming up straight after the traffic with Estro Moore Donoghue. Welcome back to the Culture Club. Panty Bliss, Rory O'Neill is with us. He, of course, is going to be emceeing Rock Against Homelessness concert in aid of Focus Ireland this weekend. You can get details of how to get tickets to watch the streaming of that via Ticketmaster. So, Rory, we're going to move to movies. And what's this about you loving monster movies?
I do love monster movies. I love, you know, all the King Kongs, including the ones you're not meant to like. You know, Aliens, all of those. I just love a good monster movie.
Why?
I don't know. I don't really know. I do. I've always loved them. I love this, you know, when they're destroying these things. I love the fight scenes. I don't know why I like monster movies.
But you like them. That's fair enough.
I love them.
You did pick another movie for us, which I don't think has any monsters in it. The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie.
Well, that's because The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie, like, if somebody's going to be working with me on some sort of, you know, creative project, I always make sure that they've watched The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie first, because otherwise there's not a lot of point, because they won't get any of my references. It's had just a massive influence on me and everything.
Why?
To
explain
do with
it. For those listeners who haven't seen the movie, tell us about it.
Well, it's a 1968. It's an Oscar-winning title performance by Maggie Smith. 1968 is also the year I was born, interestingly. And it stars Maggie Smith as Miss Jean Brodie, and she is a teacher in a very, very conservative, you know, grey a girls' boarding school in Edinburgh in the 1930s. And she is colourful and artistic and treats the kids differently than everyone else. And it's a little hard to explain, but she's a flawed character also. And her major, major flaw is in the 1930s, she thinks, you know, there's a lot to be said for Mussolini. And her flaws lead to the death of one of the schoolgirls, and turns the other schoolgirls turning against her. But the central performance by Maggie Smith is effing amazing. It's incredibly quotable. It's from it's based on a novella by Muriel Spark. It's sharp, it's witty, it's clever, it's sort of deals with big themes. It's just an absolutely brilliant movie. It's an incredible central performance.
I think we have a scene from it with Maggie Smith in it as an example.
Oh, listen to the accent.
Little girls, I am in the business of putting old heads on young shoulders, and all my pupils are the creme de la creme. Give me a girl at an impressionable age, and she is mine for life. You girls are my vocation. If I were to receive a proposal of marriage tomorrow from the Lord Lion, King of Arms, I would decline it. I am dedicated to you in my prime. And my summer in Italy has convinced me that I am truly in my prime. Emily, Mary MacGregor, you are new to this institution. It is possible you will hear my teaching methods decried in certain quarters as being unsuitable for a conservative school like Marcia Blaine. That is to say, a school dedicated to the status quo. Can anyone define the status quo? Sandy?
Does it mean staying the same, Miss Brodie?
Precisely. Staying the same to the point of petrification. P-E-T-R-I-F-I-C-A-T-I-O-N. Petrification. I do not intend to devote my prime to petrification. Prop up your books in case of intruders.
Maggie Smith in a scene from The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie. Television. We ask you for formative music influences. Tell us about the television you watched as a child or teenager.
Well, the first one that will always come to mind when people ask me about my sort of TV as a child is Charlie's Angels. I was obsessed with Charlie's Angels. I wanted to be Jill, but I would have taken any of the others, you know, also. You know, they were beautiful and gorgeous, and they were bouncing around with shiny, bouncy Californian hair, and they carried guns, and they, you know, did secret missions. I mean, I absolutely wanted to be one of the Charlie's Angels. I still fucking want to be one of the Charlie's Angels. Who doesn't? And I loved all of those types of shows. I was really into the Bionic Woman and all of that as well. You know, I sometimes joke and say, you know, I was raised, you know, by those three women.
Right. And what about current day television? What do you enjoy?
Well, actually, I've just finished watching C, which is the sort of the science fiction series from 2019 on Apple. And delighted to see it's getting another series. But this year, I watched more television in the last year than I ever have in my whole life. I watched all the box sets that I'd never watched before. If I had to just pick one off the top of my head, probably Call My Agent, the French one about the talent agents. And I constantly go back to Bob Burgers when I just want a 20-minute giggle.
What's Bob's Burgers, which we actually have
a
clip from?
Bob's Burgers? Bob's Burgers is an animated show about a family that run a burger restaurant. But it's really charming. It's funny. The characters are brilliantly done. Yeah, no, I love Bob's Burgers.
Let's hear a bit from it.
Click, 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 click.
Louise, stop click, saying click.
Click.
And Tina, will you stop typing like that?
I'm refreshing my email. I'm waiting for an invitation to Tammy's bat mitzvah.
I believe the term is badminton. Common mistake.
No, Jean, Tammy's Jewish. It's a ceremony where she reads from the Torah, lights a candle, and becomes a woman.
Sounds like Mike's spa night. Except I read The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Ooh.
You know a lot about bat mitzvahs for someone who thought Hanukkah was Han Solo and Chewbacca's baby.
It's about becoming a woman, and it's a really great party. Why wouldn't I research that? Plus, rumor has it, this one's going to be packed with beefos.
What are beefos?
BFOS, boys from other schools.
What's wrong with the boys from your school?
I need fresh faces and fresh butts.
You'll take the butts you're given and you'll like it.
Bob's Burgers, okay. books. You mentioned earlier your favourite movie, The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie, based on a novella by Muriel Spark, who is also your favourite author, I believe.
Well, she's one of them. I always have such trouble with these things when people ask, you know, what is your actual? I do love Muriel Spark, and mostly because of my absolute obsession with The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie, which is, you know, Panty wouldn't exist without that novella and that movie. But apart from that, like, if you ask me to say, which author have I read the most of, it would be Stephen King, because, again, I've been reading Stephen King since I was a teenager, and I still enjoy a good Stephen King book, yeah.
And you have a childhood favourite that you still love.
I do. If you're going to ask me what book have I read most in my life, it's The Black Stallion by Walter Farley, which is like a child's book or, you know, teenager's book from the 1950s. But I, as well as loving monster movies, I also love all of these stories that are about people who get trapped on desert islands and end up building their own societies. And this is, you know, kind of one of those. They made a movie with Mickey Rooney about it. Basically, this young boy is on a ship coming from, you know, the Arab world. And there's an incredible wild black stallion on the ship, too. And the ship goes down and he and the stallion are the only survivors. And they survive alone on a desert island for a while until eventually they're, you know, becoming best of friends. But, you know, only the boy can tame him, and they get rescued and they go to America and they end up winning the, you know, the Kentucky Derby or the, you know, so it's a really fantastical story. But there's something about it. I've always loved it.
We actually
I still
have,
read it.
We have the audiobook version, so let's hear a bit of it.
Oh, you do?
The Drake stopped at Alexandria, Benghazi, Tripoli, Tunis, and Algiers, passed the Rock of Gibraltar, and turned north up the coast of Portugal. Now they were off Cape Finisterre on the coast of Spain, and in a few days Captain Watson told Alec they would be in England. Alec wondered why the black was being shipped to England. Perhaps for stud, perhaps to race. The slanting shoulders, the deep, broad chest, the powerful legs, the knees not too high nor too low, These, his uncle had taught him, were marks of speed and endurance. That night, Alec made his customary trip to the stall, his pockets filled with lumps of sugar. The night was hot and still. Heavy clouds blacked out the stars. In the distance, long streaks of lightning raced through the sky. The black had his head out the window. Again, he was looking out to sea, his nostrils quivering more than ever. He turned, whistled as he saw the boy, then again faced the water. Alec felt elated. It was the first time that the stallion hadn't drawn back into the stall at sight of him.
That's The Black Stallion by Walter Farley. We're almost out of time, Rory. So very quickly, what podcast would you recommend to us?
Oh, well, obviously The Panty Personals. Available on all platforms.
See, we're giving you a great chance to plug everything tonight. Including the Rock Against Homelessness concert in aid of Focus Ireland, which Panty Bliss will be emceeing this Sunday, the 20th of June. And if you want to get a ticket to support the event and the great charity, available on Ticketmaster. Tickets for the streamed event cost €23. Rory O'Neill, Panty Bliss, thank you so much for joining us here on The Culture Club on The Last Word of Today FM.
My pleasure. Thanks, Matt.